This podcast contains descriptions of violence against children and adult language and is not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Suffer the Little Children, the true crime podcast giving voices back to the victims of child abuse and shining a harsh spotlight on the parents, guardians, and caretakers who silence them. I'm your host, Lane, and this is episode 64, Zayden Jovanovich. When a neighbor called 911 to report loud arguing on the evening of April 11, 2019, police in Wichita, Kansas responded to the mobile home expecting to break up a domestic dispute. After speaking with the couple, officers learned there were two young children inside and received permission from the couple to check on them. Instead of finding two little ones sleeping peacefully, the officers walked into a scene that would undoubtedly haunt them for the rest of their lives. This is the heartbreaking story of Zayden Jovanovich. My sources today were the Wichita Eagle, KWCH-12, The Dreamin' Demon, Cake News, Kansas.com, KSN, Sedgwick County Court Records, and Julius Kasura. Time to thank some new patrons. Huge thank yous go out to Bridget from Lexington, Michigan, Crystal from Morris, Illinois, Kelly from Monroeville, Pennsylvania, Sarah from London, England, and Carrie from Inglewood, Western Australia. Thank you all so much for your support. Also, shout outs to a few more patrons who made the switch with me from my former patron platform to Patreon. Dan from Nampa, Idaho, Jody from Melbourne, Florida, and Judy from O'Fallon, Missouri. I really appreciate your continued support. Since I have closed down my former Podbean patron site, which canceled everyone's pledges, if you'd like to make a new pledge to help support the show and keep the weekly episodes coming, please visit patreon.com/stlcpod. All pledge levels receive perks, including a shout-out by name on the show, but if you pledge $10 or more a month, you'll also receive access to bonus content. Last week, I released my first Patreon-exclusive bonus minisode on the story of 2-year-old Keegan O'Brien from Doncaster, England. I'm hoping to release 1 to 2 bonus minisodes per month, so don't miss out. Again, thank you so much to all of my patrons. Today's story is an incredibly sad one that's still ongoing. Zayden was the third child I ever wrote about on Suffer the Little Children blog when I first started it back in early 2019, so I hold this little guy especially close to my heart. While researching for this episode, I came across a bunch of photos of Zayden that I'd never seen before, and I'm not gonna lie, I ugly cried for a long time looking at those photos. This baby deserved so much better. On the evening of April 11th, 2019, Shannon Higgins was standing on his front porch when he heard a disturbance from a neighbor's mobile home and called 911, telling the dispatcher, "I was standing out on my porch. I heard very violent yelling, and then I heard people striking each other and yelling and screaming, and I still hear a woman screaming. Whatever's going on in that house is not good right now." The disturbance spilled outside the mobile home while Mr. Higgins waited for police to respond, and he watched with concern as the man pushed the woman back inside their home and shut the door. Fortunately, police arrived soon afterward. Officers found the couple in question, 26-year-old Patrick Robert Jovanovich and 22-year-old Brandy Kai Marchant, walking around the neighborhood and separated the two for questioning. They had only lived in the mobile home for about 2 months. Prior to that, they lived in a small house in Wichita's Oakview neighborhood, in the 4900 block of South Jade Avenue. According to Brandy, she and her boyfriend got into an argument because Patrick let her sleep all day, as if she's not a full-grown adult who can be held responsible for her own sleeping habits. The temperature in Wichita that evening was under 40 degrees, and Brandy, who was wearing shorts, complained of being cold. However, she declined to move the interview inside, saying the house was a mess. Meanwhile, Patrick told police that Brandy was agitated by a child who wouldn't stop crying. His account seemed to be supported by a text message Brandy sent Patrick the day before, which read,
"I am losing it. I need to stay somewhere. Zayden just won't stop. I can't even watch fucking TV."
Less than a minute later, she sent a second message.
"He had 3 bags of oatmeal and 2 things of yogurt, and he is still screaming."
This was the first police had heard of children being present in the home, so they asked if they could see the kids. Patrick agreed to let the officers inside the home, but he asked them not to wake the children. Inside one of the mobile home's bedrooms, an officer heard a baby cooing and discovered 4-month-old Ty under a pillow in his crib, lodged against the side of the crib and surrounded by pillows, stuffed animals, and other suffocation hazards. The baby, the officer noted, could not control his head and was noticeably small for his age. Later, at the hospital, doctors determined that Ty weighed only 8 pounds. The average 4-month-old boy weighs about 15.4 pounds. In addition to being extremely malnourished, Ty sported a bruise on his left ear, a swollen left jaw, and 2 healing rib fractures doctors believed to be up to 2 weeks old. Medical staff determined Ty's injuries to be
abusive in nature in addition to the neglect.
The baby, who had been born with marijuana in his system, also suffered from severe diaper rash and a genital infection. In a playpen, a second officer located 2-year-old Zayden, face down in what appeared to be vomit. The tiny boy was swaddled tightly in a blanket, not moving, and his skin was cold to the touch. The officer unwrapped the blanket and found Zayden was wearing footy pajamas with a zipper in the front, but his arms were not in the sleeves, instead trapped inside the garment against his body. The sleeves were tied in a knot at Zayden's throat. When the pajamas were unzipped, the officer noted that Zayden's body was
black, blue, and purple and green in color.
The officer cleared the little boy's airway with wipes found nearby and valiantly tried performing CPR until EMS arrived, but by that time it was far too late. Zayden was pronounced dead at 12:01 a.m. on Friday, April 12, 2019. He had celebrated his second birthday barely a month before. The preliminary results of Zayden's autopsy revealed abrasions or scrapes on the inside and outside of his lips, as well as abrasions to his nose and contusions or bruises on his head and torso. The abrasions on his lips, according to a doctor, were consistent with someone forcing his face onto something by pushing on the back of his head. Zayden had thin, fine blonde hair and blue eyes, but his pale skin was discolored. He was in the early stages of decomposition, which meant he had been dead for at least several hours prior to the discovery of his body. At his age, Zayden should have weighed around 28 pounds, but at the time of his death, he weighed only 14.9 pounds. Both children were underweight by about half of what they should have weighed at their ages. Police reported that they were unable to find any food in the house. Patrick told police he fed Zayden the morning of Thursday, April 11th, before heading off to work. When he returned home, he didn't see Zayden, and he was unaware his son was dead. Brandy said that on Wednesday, April 10th, she and Zayden had been
feeling poorly for several days.
Before putting him to bed that evening, she fed him oatmeal, yogurt, and chocolate milk. Before Brandy went to bed around 6 a.m. on Thursday, she restrained her 2-year-old son inside his own pajamas to prevent him from pulling himself out of his playpen and crying at his door. Then this Mother of the Year candidate went to bed and slept the entire day. A police affidavit stated,
"She had not seen either child throughout the entire day and was unaware that Zayden had died."
The same evening, Brandy and Patrick were arrested and held in the Sedgwick County Jail. Each received 5 charges, including first-degree murder with underlying felonies of neglect and abuse, 2 counts of abuse of a child, and aggravated endangerment of a child. For obvious reasons, 4-month-old Ty was removed from Brandy's custody by the state of Kansas and taken to the hospital in critical condition. Patrick, it turned out, was not little Ty's biological father, but I'll talk more about that later. Brandy also apparently has 2 older sons who were not in her care at the time of Zayden's death, and Patrick has an older daughter as well. It was later reported that Shannon Higgins was not the first person to call 911 about the discord in the Marchant Jovanovich home. In fact, 22 total 911 calls regarding incidents involving Brandy and Patrick were made from November of 2017 through April of 2019 by concerned bystanders, Brandy and Patrick themselves, and Patrick's mother, Donna Lloyd. Of his call, Mr. Higgins told Cake News,
"I turned to head back to the house when I heard a woman wailing in a way that made my stomach sink, so then I called 911.
He also mentioned seeing Zayden's grandfather arrive at the mobile home on Friday morning, apparently hoping the reports about Zayden's death were untrue. Mr. Higgins said,
"I realize this was obviously a loved one or something that is begging this isn't true, hoping they would answer the door. I started having tears in my eyes because I knew I just walked into someone's nightmare."
A recurring theme among the 911 calls was domestic abuse allegedly perpetrated by both Patrick and Brandy. Brandy's mental health was also a subject that was frequently mentioned in the calls. One thing that's clear throughout all of the calls, some of which were released to the public, is that Zayden, his baby brother, and his older sister were subjected to a home life filled with violence, instability, and strife. During many of the calls, the dispatchers were often aware that children were inside the home at the time. Several of the calls contained reports that Brandy was threatening to commit suicide, including one call made by Patrick while Brandy was pregnant, saying,
"My fiancé just put a knife to her throat and is trying to kill herself."
In one recording, it's clear that Brandy made the call after an altercation between herself and Patrick in which she fears she had injured him, and also reports striking her son.
Brandy Martin. But this is I'm calling for myself.
Okay.
My boyfriend tried to touch me, and I pushed him off of me, and I made him hit his head on the wall.
Okay.
And I smacked my son earlier in the face.
Okay. Does he need EMS?
I don't know. I kicked him off of me because usually when we're fighting, he's really abusive. So I pushed him really hard, and his
okay.
head put a hole in the wall.
Would you say he needs EMS? Is he laying there on the floor or anything?
No, he's got in the car and left.
Okay, so he has left?
Yeah.
Okay. When did he leave?
Literally a minute ago.
Okay. What about your son? Does he need EMS at all?
No, he left with him as well.
Okay.
During a call in March of 2018, Zayden's paternal grandmother, Donna Lloyd, made this report to the dispatcher about Brandy.
Okay.
One time she pushed him and knocked his head into the wall. And then she slapped my 11-month-old grandbaby. You guys came out and didn't do a damn thing about it. And that baby was over here for 2 days with her fingerprints on his face when he's 11 months old. And March 8th, he turned a year old. And this has been going on. He's lost 3 jobs because she'll call the job and tell him to come home or she's going to kill the baby and kill herself. And this went on till he lost 3 damn jobs. He doesn't have a shirt on, so you'll see his bite mark.
Do you think he needs to be seen by EMS?
Huh?
Does he need to be seen by EMS?
Probably not.
Okay.
But you know, you'll see the bite mark on him because he's in his underwear and no shirt.
Okay.
And the doors are not locked.
Okay, and are there any weapons that you're aware of?
Oh, no. No.
Okay, and any injuries?
Well, her banging her head and taking a knife and trying to kill herself is pretty dangerous to me, and it's a dangerous environment for those 2 babies and my granddaughter.
In one call recorded on February 3, 2019, just 2 months prior to Zayden's death, an argument was overheard during which Patrick cursed at Brandy and accused her of cheating. The sound of a scuffle ensued, following which Brandy cried out for help.
Help! Help! Here! Help! Here!
Help!
There's your phone.
Hello, Sussex County 911.
Get up off of the floor, Brandy. Brandy, get up off of the floor. Get up off of the floor.
Hello?
Exactly what I'm talking about.
When a sheriff's officer responded to that call, Brandy and Patrick told him they had been fighting about money. Brandy said she had bipolar disorder and had been off her medication for several days due to her state-issued health insurance lapsing. There is no mention in the report of the officer checking on the couple's children. The Kansas Department for Children and Families was involved with the family twice before Zayden died. On November 5, 2017, DCF was called to investigate an
allegation of emotional abuse arising from allegations that Brandy was making homicidal and suicidal statements in the presence of children.
According to the DCF report on the 2017 incident, which wasn't produced until after Zayden died, the agency interviewed all involved parties multiple times, both by phone and in person, and one child, who I assume was Zayden's older sister, Patrick's daughter from an earlier relationship, made a chilling comment to the caseworker based on one statement in the report.
One child reported that homicidal statement mentioned the decedent, Zayden.
DCF told reporters the allegation in that instance was unsubstantiated, and the case closed. The second incident took place on November 21, 2018, when Brandy and her newborn baby, Ty, tested positive for marijuana at birth. Social workers evidently responded a full week later on November 28th and decided that because
medical officials did not indicate the child's health was negatively impacted by marijuana usage,
the case was closed and reassigned from the status of
infant alleged victim of abuse slash neglect
to
family in need of assessment infant positive for substances.
A caseworker made a home visit the same day. Brandy and Patrick were both present, and the caseworker noted that Zayden and Ty were
both observed in the home and appeared healthy. Family had all necessary supplies for infant.
DCF created a care plan for the family, and at a follow-up visit on December 12, 2018, Brandy participated in completing the DCF safety plan. A month later, the case was again closed without a finding of abuse or neglect. The next DCF involvement in Zayden's life was after his death, at which time the agency obviously substantiated physical abuse and neglect. As I mentioned earlier, Patrick Jovanovich was Zayden's father, but not Ty's. In May of 2019, Ty's biological father, Julius Kasura, spoke to Wichita's Cake TV about the little guy's progress after his near-fatal ordeal. Julius, who had just learned he was Ty's father after a very recent paternity test, told the news station,
"I had no clue whether, and regardless as if it were my son or not, if I would have been aware of any of that, I would have reported it. I would have done something. She didn't strike me as the kind of person that would do anything like this."
As for Ty, Julius said,
"I'm just really happy he's doing so good. He's able to hold his food down. He's able to he's reacting to lights and sounds and, you know, people talking to him. He's expected to make a full recovery."
That was a huge relief because when Julius first arrived at the hospital to see his son, things looked grim.
"I was devastated. I was worried. I was scared."
Now that Ty had a positive prognosis and he was fighting for custody of his son, Julius said,
"In prayers left and right, and, it's a blessing that, you know, I have this chance with him. I love him dearly. His family loves him. He's got a lot of love, you know, and I have an ungodly amount of support behind me."
Julius had set up a GoFundMe to help pay Ty's medical expenses, but shortly afterward he shut it down, posting some great news on the fundraiser page.
"I was informed that the state is going to cover all the hospital expenses."
In August of 2019, Zayden's full autopsy report was released, and his cause of death was ruled to be dehydration and malnutrition. I can't imagine how much this poor baby suffered during the days that had to have taken him to waste away. According to the autopsy report, Zayden also had blunt force trauma to his face and head and methamphetamine in his system. Other significant conditions listed in the report included possible asphyxia. Again, Zayden weighed only 14.9 pounds at his death, just over half the body weight of the average boy his age, and the autopsy report stated that early decomposition was observed, suggesting Zayden had likely been dead for a matter of hours or even days prior to discovery. Despite these findings, on September 9, 2019, Brandy Marchant had the audacity to plead not guilty in Sedgwick County District Court. As for Patrick Jovanovich, on June 9, 2019, he was attacked by a fellow inmate at the Sedgwick County Jail, 26-year-old Lawrence Brown, who was subsequently charged with aggravated battery as a result of the attack. Patrick underwent brain surgery for his injuries, and he was still recovering when he appeared in court on September 10th of that year with his attorney, Tricia Oldridge, who requested a mental evaluation for her client due to his brain injuries. Proceedings in Patrick's case were postponed without a new date being set, which the judge ruled would only occur if, or when, Patrick was determined competent to stand trial. In November of 2019, Judge David Kaufman granted the defense's request to have Patrick undergo a mental evaluation, and subsequently, Patrick was deemed incompetent to stand trial. Judge Kaufman ordered Patrick sent to Larned State Hospital, which is the largest psychiatric facility in the state of Kansas, without objection from prosecutors. I know a lot of people crow about child abusers getting prison justice, but this case right here is the reason I can't agree with these sentiments, at least not prior to conviction. This attack left Patrick in a kind of limbo state where he couldn't be tried, but he also couldn't be released. This attack only prolonged justice for both Zayden and Ty. In January of 2021, Patrick was again evaluated, this time found competent to stand trial, and returned to Sedgwick County Jail. An arraignment and motion hearing was scheduled for June 4th of 2021 for Patrick, who's now 28. For 24-year-old Brandy, whose attorney withdrew in August of 2020 and was replaced with appointed attorney Casey J. Cotton, there are no future dates scheduled as of this recording. Now, I'd like to do something I rarely get to do, and that's provide some good news. In January of 2020, Ty's dad, Julius, reached out to me after coming across my blog. By that time, Ty was officially reintegrated with Julius and his family, although they were still going through the permanency process to finalize custody. Julius said,
"I'm just doing what's right by my children. They are my greatest creations. God gives us glorious gifts. He never gives us anything that we can't handle. All I can do is provide the life that they deserve."
When I heard from Julius again in June of 2020, he told me the last hurdle was cleared and he was finally given permanent, full custody of Ty. For a little guy born into horrific conditions and neglected from day one, the progress this baby has made is incredible. Julius told me that if police had discovered him even a day later, Ty likely wouldn't have survived, but fortunately, he's a fighter.
"You'd never in 1 million years guess he went through everything that he went through. His recovery has been amazing."
By that time, Ty was 19 months old, weighed about 34 pounds, had started walking and parroting words, and was still the happiest little guy with the most beautiful smile. It's been almost a year since I last posted an update to the blog about Ty, so I thought it was about time to check in with Julius to see how the little guy's doing. This time I had the privilege of talking with Julius, who goes by the nickname of Juice, and during our conversation, he filled me in on what his little fighter is up to now. With all the video conferencing and virtual meetings going on these days, we all want to look our best. If you're like me, you're probably confused by all the different methods of teeth whitening on the market. Now that I'm partnering with Smile Brilliant, I've learned a few things that you might find helpful about home teeth whitening methods. For example, LED lights are a novelty item. Whitening strips neglect the gum lines, crevices, and molars. Charcoal is abrasive and wears down your enamel. And whitening toothpaste only works on surface stains. So if none of these miracle products really works, what does? The number one product recommended by dentists is the custom-fitted tray, which usually costs an arm and a leg because they require a dentist to make them by hand using a model of your teeth. With Smile Brilliant's Lab Direct process, you can get custom-fitted teeth whitening trays at a fraction of the price without a single visit to the dentist. Using an exact model of your teeth, Smile Brilliant's lab technicians will handcraft your trays to give you the best possible whitening results. All you have to do is visit smilebrilliant.com, and when you order their system, make sure you use the coupon code CHILDREN at checkout for 30% off. When you receive the package from Smile Brilliant, it's really simple. You just make your dental impressions at home and return them using the prepaid envelope they provide you. In a matter of 1 week, Smile Brilliant will have your trays back in the mail. Using my coupon code CHILDREN means you're supporting me while saving a huge amount of money, so check out smilebrilliant.com today. Today on the podcast, I have a very special guest. I have Baby Ty's biological dad, Juice. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So I guess we should probably start with, I know that Baby Ty himself was a little bit of a surprise. Is that right?
Yeah, he sure was.
Did you find out when he was coming along or afterward?
Well, how the whole ordeal even happened with me even meeting Brandy. I used to have a warehouse. So we worked on cars and all kinds of random stuff in that shop. And I threw parties there and I met her through one of my parties. I threw there and the party life, one thing leads to another. And that kind of happened with her. And a month or two later, she showed up at my shop when I was working one day. And yeah, she was like, "Well, I'm pregnant." I was like, "Oh, all right." I remember when she was talking to me, I looked her up on Facebook because, like I said, I just met her that one night. It was kind of a one-night fling kind of deal, I guess. And found out she had a boyfriend, which is the guy that got arrested with her, Patrick. And I remember having a problem with that. "You cheated on your boyfriend with me. That kind of put me in a predicament. But how do I know that that's my baby?" And we kind of had an issue there. I told her, I was like, "You know, when the baby is born, we need to do a DNA test
So I was like, and then if he comes back to be mine, then of course, you know, I'm going to step up. But if he's not, I'd really like to not hear from you anymore. Right. And, you know, and that was an issue right off the bat. And it started a whole slew of craziness during that whole process. I mean, like, she like freaked out because I didn't want to have nothing to do with her per se and everything. And so she just kind of blocked me on everything. And what was it like, the, you know, 9-10 months later, somebody hits me up and this girl's like, you know, you're a POS. You're such a good father to all your other children. And who's Ty? Who are you? She was like, well, Ty's your kid. And, you know, Brandy had the kid and had the baby and everything. I was like, oh, well, she didn't tell me. This was like 2 months after Ty was born.
So she did the DNA test. Was it right away, or how did she know for sure?
That was even kind of a game to get that even going, because I messaged her right after that girl was messaging me all that crazy stuff. You know, I messaged her and I was like, so you had the baby and you didn't reach out to me or try to figure the situation out. And she got kind of defensive. She was like, well, I didn't think you wanted nothing to do with the baby and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, like I said, if that's my baby, like I'm going to be there. That's my kid. There's really honestly nothing you can do about that. And, you know, I'll pay for the DNA test or whatever we need to do, but we need to do a DNA test and find out. And I was like, but if he's not mine, like, you know, you'll never hear from me again. And that took like a month to even be able to get that going. Like, she showed up one night because I asked her if she can bring the baby over. I was like, well, can you bring the baby over and we can do the DNA test and everything? And but she had bought the DNA test, and she showed up one night, didn't have the DNA test or the baby. She was like showing up trying to holler. And I was like, no, that's not what's happening. Like,
right.
You know, I was like, you need to leave. I was like, but we can do this DNA test. I was like, I don't want anything with you or anything. And she, like, I don't know, even that night, like, that's the first time I really seen her craziness was that night, because that night I had some dude hitting me up and he was like, how dare you lay a finger on Brandy and steal her stuff? And I was like, what?
And wow.
I got on because she had unblocked me on Facebook, and I seen that she was like, well, Juice Kasura beat me up and stole my wallet and all this stuff. I was like, what? And I embarrassed her. So she just like freaked out. I mean, I had to threaten to send my sister over there. I was like, I'll send my sister over there. She fights dudes. So like, you didn't take that stuff off. I was like, because one, that's a lie. And she's like, I'm going to call the cops on you. They're not going to believe you. They'll believe me, which is true. I mean, that does happen. And I was kind of freaking out. I was like, I didn't touch this girl. And she finally took it down and everything and chilled out.
I mean, the number of times that police showed up at their house or their trailer, you know, when they moved, it seems like the police were probably pretty familiar with her brand of crazy.
Yeah, which is crazy that nothing was ever done. 20 some odd times of them being, you know, and that's the thing that really messes with me is people like that, DCF and all that, they get called on them time and time and time again and nothing happens. When, you know, I did lose custody of my daughters and they gave it to my mother. You know, and it was just something simple. And on that note, I didn't see a day in court. I never talked to any social worker. Nobody reached out to me. I didn't even get to stand up for myself. They just took my rights and gave them away. And then people like this, I mean, they can have ongoing cases and cases of violence and suicide threats and all this crazy stuff, and nothing happens. I'm outraged with just the DCF, DHS, DCF, whatever it is in whatever state, social services. Like, it was just a crazy organization, honestly. Even my two boys in Colorado, their mom got arrested and they got put in foster care. And I had to fight for a year to get them out of foster care and get them home. And actually, like, this whole ordeal with Ty happened right at the end of all of that. So I went 2 years back to back fighting to get kids out of foster care. I was at my all-time low when I met Brandy, because at that time, previous to that warehouse, I had a photography studio. It was pretty successful. And then shortly after getting in there, I lost custody of my daughters. The photography studio, the owners of the building sold the building. And I just I crashed because everything I had, I lost. And that's when I got that warehouse and we were partying constantly. And then that's how she was even in my path.
And she was a mother already and she's out there just partying it up.
Yeah. And I had no clue. I mean, she was just this little string bean girl, you know, right. Would have never even known she had children. Oh, and for the record, she did not look like how she looks in her mugshot when I met her.
No, I mean, Facebook photos are much different.
Yeah, well, even meeting her in person, I didn't even know the girl had a wig until the third time I met her. Yeah, she went to scratch her head, and I was like, are you wearing a wig? And it moved a little bit, and then she was like, yeah, I got this condition. I can't grow hair. I was like, oh, okay, say less. You know, right. I didn't want to pick on her about it or nothing like that. But I didn't like her at that point, but I wasn't trying to be a douche or anything. Right. And I mean, she's reached out to me while she was in jail, and I accept the calls. One, just out of humility, and then two, I'm curious, and I want to know before social media knows and the media knows what's going on. I haven't heard from her in a few months, but she reached out to me probably 4 months ago and said that the DA is still building their case against her and her and Patrick. I guess they're trying to get them to testify against each other. But I know the DA threw out manslaughter and they threw out something. There was another charge that they could have got hit, but they're going after first or second degree murder.
Yeah, it doesn't take a couple of days even for a child to starve to death. It takes a long time. And that baby was, I mean, both of them were very, very small for their ages, even well before
Ty was 4 months and he was weighing 7.8 pounds.
Right. And that's a newborn size. That's crazy. Yeah,
that's birth weight. The officer, you know, and that's another like the first time I had to go to court. So everything unfolded on a Friday. I was at work and then I get a call from the homicide department. Wow. And it got real fast because we got the results back that he was mine 2 weeks before all this stuff happened. I remember throughout that 2 weeks, I'd hit her up and be like, hey, you know, can I see the baby? Can I see the baby and everything? I want to see my son. And it was always an excuse why she couldn't come. And then literally the day before all that stuff happened, I hit her up and I was kind of an asshole to her. Excuse my language. I hit her up and I was like, look, I was like, either you're going to let me see this baby or I'm going to take your ass to court. And I'm very good in court. Very good. I was like, I will win. I was like, I promise you. And I was like, and I'm not just going to go for temporary or anything like that. I'm going to shoot for full custody. And honestly, my record is a whole lot better than yours. And I will take you to court and I'm not scared. You know, and she messaged me back and she was like, look, I'm really sorry. She was like, I got a lot of stuff going on right now that I don't want to bring you down in and all this stuff. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then she was like, I don't want you to see me like this. And stuff like that. And I was like, well, what's going on? Talk to me. What's happening? And then nothing. I didn't hear nothing else from her. And the next day I get a phone call from the homicide department. They called me and they asked me who I was. And I told them who I was. And they're like, do you know Brandy? And I was like, yeah. I was like, I just found out I had a kid with her. And they were like, well, who's the kid? And I was like, his name is Ty. He was like, Brandy and her boyfriend are booked under first degree murder. Zayden, his brother, is dead and your son is in ICU in critical condition. I can't even explain the feeling I had inside. And I was just like, say what? I was like, well, what hospital is he in? and they're like, well, you can't see him because you're not on the birth certificate. They're like, so we can't tell you what hospital he's in or what's going on. The DCF, they can update you with what's going on. You have a court date, and that court date was Monday, that following Monday. Yeah. I was going through, I had to leave work and everything. I was so stressed.
I can't imagine.
Oh, it was crazy. I left work and I went home, and I won't lie, I smoked a doobie.
I bet.
I'm like, I gotta chill, man. And I calmed my nerves, recollected myself. I go to court on Monday. Monday they gave me that affidavit of everything that happened, and I cried. The affidavit, there was all the stuff that was in the news, but it was different reading the step-by-step play from the officers. I feel bad for the officers that were there and seen all this stuff.
Yeah.
it was so detailed. I could see it, you know, like, oh. I really wish I could meet those officers, to be honest. That even almost makes me tear up now just thinking about that. I don't even have that affidavit anymore. It's almost hard not to read it. I got rid of it. I got tired of reading it, but it would just throw me in a weird funk every time I read it. There was drugs involved. Ty, they could not test Ty because he didn't have enough blood in his system to test it.
God.
And he had like fractured ribs and he's bruised all over the place. And, you know, so they weren't able to test him, but during the autopsy, they were able to test Zayden and they found methamphetamine on his brain. Yeah, that whole deal is just insane, man. I did get lucky during the process of Ty. Well, I wouldn't say lucky because they should have just gave me my son.
Right, yeah.
But because I was going through the deal with Colorado and getting my boys, I came back. And then, of course, the judge demanded me do a DNA test and a drug test before I left the courthouse, and I failed for marijuana.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So because of that, God, I had to do parenting classes, health and budget classes, drug evaluations, mental health evaluations. I lost my job during it. Everything happens for a reason. You know, like I tell everybody, like I try not to be super religious about God doesn't give you nothing you can't handle. And I tell myself this all the time. I'm just like, all right, this sucks. I just lost my job. How am I going to pay rent? And, you know, I just keep telling myself, like, he didn't give me nothing I can't handle. And I'll just try to figure out my next step. And I mean, I was able to just keep floating things by. And yeah, I made it work. I mean, when you struggle half your life, you kind of figure it out.
Right. Yeah, you get good at it, yeah. I guess. So right. When did you actually get to meet Ty for the first time? When did they let you in there to see him?
First time I got to meet Ty, he was 6 months old.
Wow.
It took a long time for that DNA test to come back because they said I couldn't see him until that DNA test came back. I said they couldn't take me serious or nothing. I was like, well, you can take me serious enough to bring me to court and yeah. humiliate me and everything, but not serious enough to see my kid. But okay.
Right.
It took a couple months for the DNA test to come back, and that was me hounding him. I mean, I had a horrible lawyer. The only time I ever even talked to my lawyer was the day of court. Every time it felt like I was just representing myself in court. But and honestly, the DCF worker that I had was amazing. Like, this chick went through all kinds of hoops to help me out. I didn't bullshit her. She didn't bullshit me. I feel like it's rare because dealing with the DCF in Colorado was a whole nother ball game. I mean, those workers suck. It was just game after game after game. And that was one thing I appreciated about this specific worker is there was no BS and no games. It was just like, look, I'm going to get this done. What are you going to do for me? And that's what it was. And she came through on everything. And she was the one that was pushing more than my own lawyer was for me to see my son. And she would get me pictures, like that picture that you shared with Ty. It had like a yellow background. It was just like when he was a little baby. That was the first picture I gotten. And that was from the DCF worker. She was like, I really thought you would like this. She took that picture and sent it to me because I couldn't see him and she knew I was losing it.
Right, of course.
Those workers, I'm so happy are in that profession because there's so many in there that don't give a crap.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. You're very lucky that you ended up with a good one. I'm very glad for you and for Ty that happened because there's too many of them that just do it for the wrong reasons.
Exactly. And the foster parents were great. Foster parents were an awesome couple. I even went to church with them and all kinds of stuff. Like, they would let me know if they'd say, hey, we're going to do this. If you want to come, you're more than welcome.
Nice.
And I was just like, that's amazing. Cause my kids out in Colorado, I had to fly to Colorado just to see them for an hour or two. And then I had to fly back home. I think I spent close to like 12 or 13 grand just visitation.
Oh my gosh.
These guys, they all worked with me and it was amazing. The only time I seen any static is when the news got a hold of me.
Mm-hmm.
And even that, like, I got in trouble by everybody for that.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. That was the only time my lawyer hit me up because he was court appointed. But that was the only time he hit me up. And I mean, these guys were stalking me everywhere I go. finally, I was just like, we can do this. I'll let you know how he's doing. They were like, the public wants to know how he's doing, if he's alive. And I was like, oh, I mean, I'll give the public that. You know, at first, I was just really not trying to be associated with it. But everybody, like, people that knew that Ty was my kid was commenting on all this stuff, and they're throwing my name all over the place. And I mean, I had every news team in town hitting me up. When I got the news, they really didn't touch bases on anything negative. But I swear that next day I get a phone call from DCF. I got a phone call from my lawyer when I went to court. They did like a gag order when I went to court and everything. I was like, holy crap. That was when he was, you know, making his comeback, and he was doing great. You know, he's holding down food and he was doing all this stuff. So, you know, it was nice to say something positive in the whole ordeal. And that's what I liked about your one story and everything. It's just something really positive out of something so negative.
When you reached out to me after that blog post, I was so glad to be able to tell everyone, oh, this baby's doing amazing, because I so rarely get to say that. His recovery's been pretty miraculous.
Yeah, he's still fat and crazy.
That is oh my awesome. God.
Yeah, he's something else now.
And he's what, 2.5?
Yeah, he'll be 3 in November 20th. He'll be 3 years old.
And so he's pretty much fully recovered.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I see nothing that is really affecting him now from them. And I thank God that he was, you know, only months old when everything happened, and not to the age where he's going to be psychologically damaged from it. Because this, he'll probably never even remember, except for there's only one thing that he still struggles with, and that's taking a bath. I don't know what happened with water or anything, but every time you go to give this dude a bath, it is like bloody murder. I have to give him baths during the day because he screams so loud.
Oh no.
And it's the entire time. Like, he's like screams so bad he'll throw up. That is the only thing. And I don't even know if that's just from that or if it's just he really doesn't like baths.
Right.
Yeah. He hates bath time. That is his most hated. If I even tell him, Ty, it's time to take a bath, he's like, no.
All right. Now that he can talk, he can tell you no. That's the one downside.
Right. Yeah. Oh. And he's getting his talking and everything. Like, I had to start watching my mouth. Ty, he catches me up on it because he'll repeat it and I'll turn around like, oh shit. And then he'll say shit. I'm like, oh,
of course.
Yeah.
And it's like, so right. Cute. You don't want to laugh, but.
Oh, no, I still giggle. Like, it's super irresponsible, but at the same time, I can't even help it because I just like, oh, God, he said that.
This tiny little voice saying these terrible things.
I'll say, Ty, bad boy. And then he'll just beat me. He's a bad boy.
You have a little parrot. So he hit all of his milestones on time, and he's perfectly happy, and his weight is totally normal. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, and how does he get along with all of his brothers and sisters?
Oh, he's a butthole. they fight constantly, and Ty, like, he's no chump, man. If they take his toys, he'll let everybody in the house know they took his toys. Where is Ty? Oh, I hear him. Ty, you want to say hi? They got him in a tent, so he's just over here throwing himself around. He's occupied, I guess.
How many live with you full-time? I got
the 3 boys full-time. The ones that I was fighting in for in Colorado, I won full custody of them, and I won sole custody of Ty. I have all 3 of them 100% of the time. On the weekends, I have 5 kids in the house, and then on holidays, I have 7 kids in the house. I have 6 kids, but I took on another one. My oldest son, he has a little sister, and she's never met her dad. It made me feel really bad. So whenever I get him, I get her too. So I claim her too.
Oh, that's awesome.
And she is adorable. But in the summertime, there's 7 kids in my house on an average day. But yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Exciting. That's a great diplomatic word for it.
My dad was just asking me the other day, he's like, you ever going to get like a wife or a girlfriend? I was like, Dad, have you seen how many kids I got? I was like, and I got them on a regular. I was like, a girl got to be outside of her mind to talk to me. I was like, I have a feeling it's just going to be me and kids for the rest of my life. If you got a weak soul, you're not going to last.
Exactly.
I live in Wichita, Kansas. So here in Wichita, I got my mom and my stepdad, and that's it. My mom is like my lifeline. Like, she watches Ty and the kids when I'm at work. And if it weren't for her, I'd probably sink. At the beginning, it was a struggle because I went from losing everything to, holy crap, I got 3 kids at home now. And one's a baby and everything. Yeah, so,
back to diapers and all that fun stuff.
It was so weird because I was watching my daughter's little sister off and on for their mom. Like, she would go out and do something. I'd watch her daughter. She was little. She was like a year or 2 years old. And I was like seriously going through baby fever at the time.
Oh, no.
Like, God, I miss this. Like, they just want to cuddle and hug. And then I got Ty.
Do you plan to tell him anything about his mom or about Zayden at some point? I know it would be a while.
You know, that part, I really don't know. I mean, eventually I'm going to have to. I mean, that's inevitable. One of the caseworkers asked me that same question. And I mean, that took me off guard for a second when she asked me, because I was just like, well, I don't know. You know, like, I'm going to wait until his mind is mature enough to wrap his mind around this whole deal that, you know, he has a dead brother and, you know, his mom's in prison for killing him and almost killing him. And that's a tough one. I would be cool if he never even knew about her. But then again, I don't want to be in 16 years old and look something up or somebody's just like, yo, your name's Ty. Like, hey, I know your dad. You're that kid. You know, him coming to me and be like that. So what's up with this? You know, and then I would have to break it to him. And that would, you know, so that's a really hard question to answer because I don't know how I'm going to. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not quite sure how I'm going to break that to him or when or how. And you know, I still talk to Brandy's family. Like, I'm cool with her mom and stuff like that. Like, it's not her family's doings and everything. Her family's actually really nice and really good people. They even tried to reach out. A couple of those phone calls to DCF was from her own family. And it was recent calls before this all happened. Like, her family called for a welfare check on her a few times. And, you know, even those went unanswered or they just blew off. And, you know, that part killed me in the media with everybody trashing her family. And I was like, you know, yeah, I'm not a fan of Brandy at all, given the circumstances, of course. But her family honestly tried. And right. They tried to be there for those kids. And they tried to see those kids as much as they could. And like, her sister even tried to go over there and see the kids a few times. And Brandy would deny them entry to the house and everything. And, you know, there's just only so much they can do because she's an adult. So,
exactly.
You know, they can't admit her to anything like, you know, rehab or anything. I mean, the family can't do anything. She's an adult. So she can say, no, I'm not doing that. There's nothing nobody can do unless it's court ordered.
People are quick to blame anyone, even if it's not someone directly involved, or, you know, they blame the families so often. I spend so much time in comment sections just defending family members who had nothing to do with it. It's, I don't know why this black and white thinking is so widespread, but they just want to pin it on somebody. Well, pin it on the people who did it. You know, Patrick and Brandy are the ones who are in jail right now.
And I mean, they're grown adults. That's just like me robbing a bank. If I robbed that bank, I robbed it on my own accord, not my family that raised me.
Right, right. Your mom didn't teach you how to do it.
Right, exactly. You know, I genuinely feel bad for her family because, I mean, they got raked through the coals, like, media-wise. But I mean, we get along and they've seen Ty. Brandy's mom's even spent a night with Ty. And, well, Ty stayed the night over there. They let me get a break. I'm a daddy. I'm a daddy daddy. I'm not partying on the weekends, daddy, at all. Right. I got my kids all the time.
I wish more of the parents I wrote about were that dedicated to their kids. I got to give you a lot of credit. Yeah,
I grew up in a single parent home. And honestly, I think that's made me what and who I am today. Honestly, I hated kids before I had kids. Like, I didn't have my first kid of knowledge until I was 25 years old. So I was going on and partying all my early 20s, and I'd make fun of all my friends that had kids, like, haha, sucks for you. And, you know, I wanted nothing to do with kids. And then my son was born, and that just saved my life, honestly. I tell him all the time that he was my game changer, because if I would have kept living that life I was living, I'd be dead by now.
Yeah.
You know, so I went from not wanting kids or wanting to be around kids to being a dedicated father, and everything I do is for my kids now.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so glad we got a chance to do this and get to hear Ty's little voice. That made my day.
Here, let's see if he'll say bye.
Hey, Ty, you want to say hi?
Hi.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, slow down for a second. You want to say bye?
Bye-bye.
Oh, can you hear him?
Yep, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, you are awesome, Ty.
Yeah.
Right.
You're going to say bye-bye to that, Ty?
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, he's out.
Oh, thank you for that. That's awesome. I appreciate it. And I really appreciate you taking all this time and talking to me. And the main thing, I always try to keep the kids' memories alive. And that's my goal with Zayden, of course. But just being able to report on how amazing Ty is and how healthy he is now and happy and loved, that's so important. I'm just so thrilled that things worked out this well for you and for him.
I am as well. It is an honest to God blessing to be where we're at now. In such a crazy journey, but I really do appreciate everything that you are doing. I do appreciate what you do and the message you're sending out and all the children you are defending. You know, that means a lot to a lot of people. It really does.
Thank you. The more people know, the more likely they can intervene before something like that happens.
Yeah, if the people can see the signs and be able to pay attention to them through other journeys and being able to link to them, like, it could save lives, and it's amazing.
What a relief to have such positive news to share about one of these stories. Thank you so much to Juice for taking the time to tell us all about his little miracle baby who survived despite all odds. I do wish I had more to tell you about little Zayden, but there's just not that much public information about him. I do know that he's very much missed by both his mother's and his father's families. Zayden is buried in the Whitechapel Memorial Garden Cemetery in Wichita, Kansas, under a headstone engraved with a teddy bear holding a pair of balloons. The inscription reads,
"In loving memory, Zayden Patrick Jovanovich, Bubba. March 8, 2017 to April 11, 2019.
No matter what happens in the legal case, at the very least, baby Ty is safe and happy and very much loved. One other thing is for sure as well. Zayden will never be forgotten. Rest well, baby boy. I will continue following the case and providing updates on sufferthelittlechildrenblog.com as I get them. That's it for this week. Join me next week for another case. If you like the show, please follow or subscribe to Suffer the Little Children on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast listening app. And please leave me a 5-star rating and a positive review on your favorite podcast platform. You can also subscribe on YouTube by searching Suffer the Little Children Podcast. Visit the website at sufferthelittlechildrenpod.com, where you can listen to episodes or become a patron for rewards ranging from a shout-out by name on the show to exclusive gifts. Follow the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Pinterest at Suffer the Little Children Pod, and on Twitter and TikTok at STLC Pod. View photos related to today's episode on Facebook and Instagram. For more stories like the one you heard today, visit sufferthelittlechildrenblog.com. This podcast is researched, written, hosted, edited, and produced by Lane. Intro theme music is by Dream Note Music, and all music for the show is licensed from audiojungle.net. Email tips, comments, questions, or case suggestions to sufferthelittlechildrenpod@gmail.com. For more information about preventing or reporting child abuse, visit childhelp.org or call your area's child abuse hotline. If you see something, say something. Until next week, bye everyone.